The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
What a beautiful Tuesday to roll into our Leach Report show. Happy to have you on board with us today as we talk UK sports for the next hour with our lineup of guests, which includes Jen Smith from the Lexington Herald Leader, Chris Fisher from the Cat's Paws, and Ken Spencer from WHAS-TV in Louisville. That's the lineup today's lineup presented by Sleep Outfitters. We'll talk a little basketball recruiting, decision day for Tyrese Maxey. We'll talk a little bit about Kentucky football, maybe a little derby with Kent Spencer. So a busy show on tap, as always. You can interact with us via Twitter @LeachReport, email leachreport@gmail.com, or you can call 877-904-1080 toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Today is the day that Tyrese Maxey announces his college decision and perhaps gives us some insight into what he's thinking on reclassification from the 2019 class to the 2018 class. There's more of a thought now that he may stay in the 2019 class. We'll get Chris Fisher's take on that coming up here in just a bit. But Maxey's a 6'3 point guard from Texas, and everybody you read who follows this part of the business, the game, thinks he's going to pick Kentucky today. P.J. Washington's dad talked with the Courier-Journal, and nothing real surprising here. He said if P.J. gets a guarantee that he's going in the first round, he'll stay in the draft, as he should. Not a surprise there. Otherwise, he says they'll have a decision to make in kind of indicated from the quotes that if it's high second round, then maybe PJ'd be a little more inclined to take his shot. Because if you're picked in that area, you still have a good shot of maybe getting guaranteed money and you're not going to get just a G League salary. But the further you shrink down that second round or don't get drafted at all, you're talking about only G League money. And it's just the comments are in line with what his dad has been saying all along in various interviews, that there's no decision that's been made. There's no strong lean. I'm sure PJ would like to go ahead and go to the NBA if the circumstances are right. We'll just have to see how it plays out in the combine. I would suspect from everything I read that the information, the feedback he gets will put him in a decision in a position where he probably is going to realize the wise decision is to come back to Kentucky for a second year, but could be wrong. He could tear it up at the combine, do well, and have a shot. I think the question with him, and if he were to regularly knock down 15, 18 footers, then that would turn some heads. But I think that's what he's probably the biggest question mark about his game that he's got to come that would from which he would benefit from a second year at UK. So we'll see how it plays out. He still hasn't had the surgery on that finger, so that might impact his shooting as well. But combine all gets rolling next week. Baseball, big win for Kentucky last night. 17th ranked Kentucky wins at number 19 Indiana 7-6. Luke Heyer hit his 17th homer and drove in three. Chris Mockamer notched his ninth save. And the pitching staff continually worked out a jam. So if you're on the Indiana side, you lament guys left on base. If you're the Kentucky side, you feel good about how your bullpen came through and continually got you out of jams where Indiana was in position to tie the game and never was able to do it. Sasha Kalia Jones, his high school coach, says that he has set up visits to NC State, Pittsburgh, and Wake Forest. Former Wildcat James Paxton pitched a no-hitter against Toronto for the Seattle Mariners. Western Hills wideout Wandale Robinson talked to rivals about his recruitment. and how Kentucky is recruiting him. He says Vince Mero's taking the lead now, selling the impact on life after college from playing for his home state. And sounds like it's a situation where it's a message that Wandale is open to. So this is one of the top prospects in Kentucky. And maybe Kentucky can turn up the pressure late and get the commitment there. We talked yesterday with Larry Vaught about his story on Eli Brown, and we got some more insight into the decision that Eli made to leave the UK football program, and it was to take care of family, and certainly I think most everyone can appreciate that. So if you haven't read that story yet, you should definitely check out Larry's work. UK softball starts SEC tournament play against Arkansas today, and Todd McShay's first mock draft for the NFL for 2019. That's Josh Allen as a first rounder, number 27. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page. That is at TomLeachKY.com. Heading to a break. When we come back, Jen Smith from the Lexington Herald Leader will join the program. It is the Leach Report Radio Network.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Quarter past the top of the hour on this sunny Tuesday as we welcome in Jen Smith from the Lexington Herald Leader, KentuckySports.com, where she covers Kentucky football and women's basketball, and lots to talk about on both of those topics. And we'll start with the Denzel Ware decision, Jen, which seemed to come out of the blue. Have you learned any more about it in the time that has passed?
You know, I think that any time a senior that goes through spring practice, you sort of assume that they're going to stick around. So I do agree that it was kind of a big shock. But, you know, I haven't been able to get in touch with Denzel and don't know all the circumstances. But I know that he's had sort of illnesses in his family, and he had a newborn son before the bowl game and that had some complications. So my guess is a lot of the, you know, there's sort of a lot of personal stuff that goes on in the background that maybe we don't know about players that have nothing to do with playing time or the program or the coaches, and sometimes life happens. So I think that's probably a big part of what's happened with Denzel.
Kentucky now moves forward to try to fill that void, and you know, before spring practice and the move of Josh Pascal, you would have figured, okay, Josh Pascal just steps up there like he did in the bowl game, played very well. But they moved him to defensive end. Do you believe they'll leave him there and look to fill the Ware void in other ways?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've actually talked to some people behind the scenes on this to sort of figure out what their plans are. And I think a lot of it will have to do with whatever formation he has them in. I mean, if they're in a nickel package, it'll look dramatically different. You know, Denzel wasn't in on a lot of those third down packages because of Pascal, and there were sort of, you know, lots of formations they used that didn't necessarily contain him. Sorry. but the thing that, you know, that stands out to me is they're very high on Boogie Watson. He was a guy that sort of played sparingly, you know, in various positions last year, and I think one good season working at the same position will be really useful for him. A guy like Jordan Wright, I think, fills in kind of naturally in that spot. And then I think Pascal goes over there in certain situations that, you know, they know what they're going to get from him, and they like what they're going to get from him. I think they sort of want him to stay on the defensive line because of the energy and effort. He sort of pulls everybody up with him as far as energy and effort. He seems to be one of those guys that's contagious in that way. And I think that defensive line is a place they really want him to stay so that he can bring that group up.
And I would think if he is as good as they hope he will be, and Josh Allen continues to move forward and plays as well as they hope he will, guys like that are the kinds of players that will attract extra attention from the other side. And all of that makes life easier for a younger guy stepping into a slot in the other outside linebacker position.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Another thing that was discussed with me as far as that movement was Josh Allen moving over into that Denzel Ware spot and putting Boogie Watson or moving, you know, one of those inside linebackers sort of into the Jordan Jones is an inside linebacker, but moving somebody else into that spot. So you know, moving Jordan Jones even over to the Josh Allen spot. They have a lot of sort of, you know, it's been one of the gifts that Mark Stoops has had as far as defense is he's been able to move guys around and knows what he's going to get from certain guys. The goal is to get the best 11 on the field. So it feels like one of those situations where they can still do that, and it gives them, you know, they still have some versatility in there. And, you know, Josh Allen over there might be an interesting look for Kentucky, especially if Pascal's in with him. So, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of intrigued by it. I don't think you ever want to lose kind of an emotional leader like Denzel Ware, but I think they do have a lot of options as far as bodies they can put there with different skill sets.
Josh Allen showed up in, I think it was Todd McShay's first mock draft. I saw this item yesterday. 27th was where he was projected, but a first-round pick. And he's a guy that has made steady progress, came in with only one other offer. I think it was from Monmouth. And now you're talking about a guy who's going to be likely a first-round pick. And I thought last year he had a big first half of the year. And I suspect teams start to then game plan for him more, and his production tailed off a little bit in the second half of the year. I would suspect he'll learn from that to how to adapt this fall.
Yeah, he didn't have, you know, he was on a monster season. I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but I wrote this a little bit in the spring, but he didn't have a tackle for loss or a sack in the final five games. And when you think about that, like, and you look at the opponents that they played, you know, clearly there was a step up in talent, and it was sort of proof to Josh in a lot of ways, he said, that he needed to up his game as far as his body, that, you know, he needed to have better stamina for these games at the end of the season so he could kind of prove himself. He could get through the double teams they were throwing at him. And then, you know, he needed to develop some strength. He needed to develop some size that, you know, that he could go up against these bigger guys. And if you look at him, he is just considerably larger than he was a season ago, even from the fall. I mean, he was much larger. They said he got a lot of his strength and muscles in his lower half of his body, which I think would help with you know, bursts of energy and being able to get to guys when he needs to.
Yeah, and you know, it's a learning process, but it's one of the big changes is when, you know, you get to a point where they start paying extra attention to you, and all of a sudden life becomes a lot more difficult than you really were had an appreciation for.
Yeah, I think that was part of the thing with Josh. But the thing that they love about Josh is he's really coachable. He likes to be told how to fix things. And I think that having an outside linebackers coach like they brought in, Brad White from the Colts, having a guy who actually understands the position and the nuances of the positions and just the tiny details that Josh needs to improve at to get to the next level. I think he's, you know, he already talked about it this spring that he had seen huge dividends as far as he said, I wish this guy had been here for the last couple of years because I feel like I've learned so much in just a spring. So I think it'll be really fun to watch him play next season just for that reason.
Talk with Jen Smith from the Herald Leader. We'll take a quick break and get one more segment in. It's 22 after the top of the hour. This is the Leach Report Radio Network, and we will be right back.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Talking with Jen Smith from the Lexington Herald Leader about Kentucky football. A.J. Rose was one of the big surprise storylines to come out of the spring game from talking to folks around the program. The thing that I was told was that he had an issue in the past with where he'd be in and out of practice a lot, you know, just nagging little injuries or things. And this time he was there, didn't miss a rep, was there day in and day out. And so I sense that, I'll see if you get the same sense, that this wasn't just a guy having a nice game in the blue-white game, that they believe he's ready to be maybe what folks were thinking he was going to be coming into last year.
Yeah, I mean, I was certainly one of those folks. I came out of the Tax Slayer Bowl where they let us watch, you know, a pretty sizable amount of practices in the week leading up to that bowl down in Florida. And A.J. Rose was the guy that impressed me the most. I mean, and at that point, they had Boone Williams and Benny Snell on the field as running backs. And I thought, where has A.J. Rose been all season? He's been amazing. You know, he was really fun to watch. He was making plays. He was sort of a cross between Benny and Boone, and that he was speedy and had some finesse, but he could bowl some people over. And then he just disappeared last season. I think the most, not touching, but sort of touching thing to me that came out of A.J. Rose after the spring game when he scored three touchdowns, was afterward he said, I really started to worry that it was me, that I was just never going to get it, that I was never going to understand the things that I needed to understand to get on the field. I started to worry that I just wasn't, you know, the right guy to play this position. You know, and you could almost see a sigh of relief on his face that he finally had a breakthrough that he'd been waiting for, that he was finally seeing some results and that other people could see that it wasn't just, you know, a flash in the pan or just talk about him. So I think that that's the kind of thing that pushes a kid through the summer, that makes him better, that makes him, you know, stronger. I think it was sort of the confidence boost that he needed that he hadn't gotten in his first 2 years at Kentucky.
I think coming into this season, I saw there was one, I don't know, somebody from ESPN or one of the media outlets said, I think pegged Kentucky under 6 wins for the upcoming season. There's not a, if you look around, there's not certainly an abundance of optimism, but our mutual friend Mr. Maggard was telling me as we were doing the spring game that NFL scouts he had talked to told him there are 7 to 8 NFL draft picks, one of them Josh Allen at least being a first rounder, but 7 to 8 guys that'll get picked. That hadn't happened, I don't know when the last time they had 7 or 8 picked. If that's the case, then I just know, looking back over the history of Kentucky football, the best teams have been the ones that had several guys that went on to play in the NFL on them. So that fact alone would suggest to me that there's more reason for optimism than people looking from the outside might think.
Yeah, you know, we can play the little Jenny Sunshine card or whatever we want at this point, but I feel like a lot of these preseason or post, you know, postseason wrap-ups or preseason looking forward things that talk about Kentucky still have not really accepted that Kentucky could be a contender, that Kentucky is an option to compete in the SEC East. I mean, obviously Georgia is a team that's going to dominate the headlines in the East. They're probably going to dominate the East. But I think that you can look around and see that if Kentucky just continues a couple of streaks that it's had, that it could have, you know, a pretty decent amount of success this season. The other thing is, it almost takes into, I think Vince Marrow tweeted this out, and I think that there's some truth to it. Everybody assumes that all these other teams, like South Carolina, for instance, or Mississippi State, that, you know, that they've improved dramatically in the offseason and that they're going to get better, and that Kentucky never really improves. I think part of that is just the name across the jersey. I think part of it is the tradition that doesn't exist. You know, I think there's a lot of sort of stuff that plays into that as far as, you know, media and talk and preseason talk. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see this team win 7 games next season. I wouldn't be surprised to see them win 6 and get to a bowl. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to beat the world, but I do think that they have a ton of talent back on defense, which is the place they dramatically needed to improve. And if they find a quarterback option, I think that they have, you know, a lot of young, untested talent around some veteran guys like C.J. Conrad, Benny Snell, you know, a veteran offensive line. You know, I think that they have a chance to be a really good team, and, you know, just like every other SEC team. But I sort of have stopped paying attention to those preseason things for that very reason.
Probably wise. Thank you, Jen.
Sure. Have a great day.
You too. At Jen Herald Leader on Twitter and KentuckySports.com. We are coming up on the hard break at the bottom of the hour, so we'll take that. We'll come back with Chris Fisher to talk about this Tyrese Maxey announcement coming up later today. Kent Spencer from WHAS in Louisville in the second half as well. It's the Leach Report Radio Network.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach KY.
26 away from the top of the hour as we roll into the second half of our Tuesday show. Chris Fisher joins us from CatsPaws.com. And big news to cover later today with Tyrese Maxey's college commitment decision from down in Texas. And the consensus certainly is that he will say UK. Is that not correct?
Yeah, I definitely think labeling Kentucky, even as the prohibitive favorite, might be selling it a little short at this point.
He is also making a decision on reclassification, and there seems to be less of a consensus on that. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think a couple weeks ago the consensus was that he would make the leap to 2018. I think that's a little bit less certain. right now, given Kentucky's guard situation. And honestly, I think that's probably the best case scenario for Kentucky to have him stay in 2019. You look at kind of the potential logjam in the backcourt with the guys they have coming in, with Kwadi Green returning, and with combined with the fact that Ashton Hagans is still very likely to reclassify as well. So looking less likely that he'll make that leap, and that, I think that's probably a good thing for both he and Kentucky.
Is it a case where he has been, has Kentucky come on strong of late? Has this been a long-standing relationship that's just going to culminate today with the announcement, or something else?
Kentucky's definitely made him one of their top priorities over the last 6 or 8 months. They got him on campus for Big Blue Madness in October, offered him a scholarship the next day. I think he was the first point guard prospect in the 2019 class that they extended an offer to. John Calipari followed up with him in November. They went to Texas and watched him again in February. He came back to Kentucky for another unofficial visit for the Alabama game in February as well. And obviously the Kentucky coaches have been keeping a very close eye on him over the first two spring evaluation periods. So he's a guy that they've made a top priority here over the last 8 months or so, and looks like that's going to pay off for them today.
Cal has certainly not shied away from multiple point guards in his time here. There's another name that has popped up on the radar that is in that 2019 class. So if Maxey stays there, and is it K-I-R-A? Is it Kira or Kyra Lewis? And tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, he's an under-the-radar guy who has really exploded onto the national scene this spring, and like you said, a guy that Kentucky has had their eye on, and I think much remains to be seen as far as point guards in the 2019 class. There's a lot of guards already on the roster, and like you mentioned, John Calipari is no stranger to playing multiple point guards together, and should those guys reclassify to 2018, he's going to need another point guard target in that 2019 class, and Kyra Lewis is certainly one of those. I would be really surprised if Kentucky doesn't make a run at Cole Anthony at some point, simply because he's just too good to ignore. I mean, regardless of who you have on the roster, this is a guy that is probably in contention for that number one overall spot, and certainly a consensus top five player in the country in that 2019 class.
Another story that you've written about at catspaws.com is involving a former Wildcat, Sasha Kalia-Jones, and what's he looking at in terms of a new landing spot and a timetable?
Definitely a strong ACC flavor in the visits that he's setting up. I think he's currently on a visit to NC State. He'll visit Pittsburgh this weekend and then Wake Forest over Memorial Day weekend. I know him being from Chapel Hill, a lot of the buzz was centered around North Carolina early in the process. I think they're still involved, but has yet to set up a visit there. But was really sad to see him go. I definitely think he's one of those guys that still has his best basketball ahead of him and really looked to be coming into his own there for Kentucky in the postseason.
They do these five-minute shooting drills in practice. It's one of Cal's longtime drills that they use. And guys will take their game-type shots, and they get up as many shots as they can in 5 minutes, and managers track their number of shots. And there was so you heard Cal reference it once in a while. Somebody made so many threes in five-minute shooting. There was one day Sasha made, I think it was 71 shots, and just a lot of little, you know, short corner-type jumpers. And we never saw him. We'd see him occasionally take that, but never saw him knock it down with regularity. But I'm like you. I think there's a good bit more upside to his game if he can find a way to tap into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was much more skilled than he was really able to show at Kentucky. I think he averaged around 13 minutes per game this season, and I don't think it was any coincidence that he announced his transfer or asked for his release on the same day that Kentucky picked up a commitment from five-star power forward E.J. Montgomery. So just a lot of competition there in the front court remains to be seen. What P.J. Washington, Wenyen Gabriel, Jared Vanderbilt, those guys do with their NBA draft decisions. But just a lot of competition there in Kentucky's front court.
I remember back in its heyday when Morgan Wooten was one of the dominant forces in high school basketball at DeMatha, and all 15 of the guys they would have on their team would get college scholarships, often all get Division I at varying levels. But the point being that there was a benefit that you got, whether you were playing a lot in games, as much as you wanted anyway, from going through the practices there. And I wonder with guys here, they will make this decision to leave because it's they're constantly going to try to recruit over you. I mean, great programs do that. Football, basketball, whatever sport you're talking about, they're constantly trying to recruit over the guys that they have. And but I think that you can often, if you hang in there, there can be a payoff for you. And I wonder if, and you can maybe speak a little more to this, if it's more the people around the players that push them to move, or the player, or do you think it's the players themselves?
No, I'm not sure. I think with the way Kentucky recruits on an annual basis, there's going to be some natural attrition there, and it could be an instance where he wanted to be a more crucial cog in the offense and maybe didn't see that for himself at Kentucky next season. Maybe he didn't feel like he was going to get a chance to maybe showcase some of his talents that we had yet to see with him in a Kentucky uniform. So maybe he was just looking to be a little bit more prominently featured in the offense and felt like another school was the best place to do that.
Yeah, I think there are times when a transfer is the right decision. Maybe you don't mesh with the coach as well as you thought you would, or you're not developing, and you think you need a fresh start. But kind of like Sasha, we saw him get better from one year to the next and the way he was coming on. So I think he was on the right track. Something else, we'll switch gears to baseball, that you've written about at the Cat's Paw site, was the no-hitter pitch by a former Wildcat last night.
Yeah, really amazing performance. His first start since striking out 16 against the A's last week, and was able to one-up himself with a no-hitter against the Blue Jays last night in his home country of Canada. So really unbelievable performance there by James Paxton.
Chris, I appreciate the time. As always, we'll let you go, and folks can read you at catspaws.com and all about Tyrese Maxey later today. Thank you.
All right, you bet.
About 17 away from the top of the hour. Heading to a break. When we come back, Kent Spencer from WHAS-TV in Louisville on the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Welcome back into the show for this Wednesday. Eddie writes in and points out, I may have said a time or two it was Tuesday. I apologize if I did. I'm looking at something here that I think that said Tuesday on my notes, and that probably what did it. Could be that, or it could be just Derby brain overload. Kent Spencer joins us from WHAS-TV. How was your Derby experience? Did you get a little wet?
You know what? I did get wet, but it wasn't that bad, and here's why. Because, Tom, we have a morning show in the morning where I go on the backside, start at 6 a.m., and I start interviewing trainers and for our morning show, and catch up on the top trainers and the horses and stuff like that in the morning. But then I go home and take a nap. I don't probably get to the track around 3:45. At that point, the weather forecast had already shown its true colors, so I was able to dress appropriately for the weather. That being said, I still got soaked. I just didn't ruin a good suit in the process.
Well, good for you. I got good and soaked. I was all in on the weather forecast, so those guys didn't have a good weekend.
Well, it's, I always say this, and I love everybody, but It's the only job in the world where you could be wrong greater than 50% of the time and not get in trouble.
And just say, oh, well, we missed that one.
Yep.
The folks who were on the Justify bandwagon were not wrong about that. Impressive performance by the Derby winner. And he's staying there in Louisville until he ships out to Baltimore, what, early next week?
Yeah, and in fact, you know, Baffert said he may not ship Justify until maybe Tuesday of next week. I don't know when they exactly have to be in the barn at Pimlico. But, yeah, he usually waits about a week and a half. He kind of did the same thing with American Pharoah just because. And they've always treated Churchill, especially the last few years when they had Pharoah, this was their kind of East Coast home base. So even after Pharoah won the Preakness, they brought Pharoah back to Churchill Downs before going up to the Belmont. So it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, they've always kept their horses here. He's going to keep Justify here. He's got his assistant trainer, Jimmy Barnes, with him. Now, Justify so far hasn't taken to the track as far as an exercise or a jog or anything like that. But he has walked. The plan has been to walk 4 days, probably go to the track for the first time tomorrow.
You've covered this event for a long time. So what's your read on Baffert with this horse versus other outstanding horses you've seen him be around?
You know, I think when you have a horse that wins the Derby, you always have to be, you know, you always have to kind of pay attention to what the trainer says and who that trainer is when they're saying it, because, you know, I feel like everybody kind of jumps the gun on a Derby winner. And I think Baffert has always been, even when Pharoah won the Derby, you know, Baffert was kind of cautious with his comment after the Derby. He wasn't really that cautious with Justify. Now he's still giving the old line, you know, one race at a time. But, I mean, he called him a special horse the day after the race and said that he had another gear that they didn't know that he had. So I think that, you know, when you've got a guy who is as good at this as Bob Baffert is, willing to use those kind of comments, you know, the fact that we all jump and say, man, this could be another Triple Crown, you know, this could be another Triple Crown winner. I think it's justified.
I was looking at some numbers yesterday on fastest first quarter and first half miles in the Derby since the early fractions were so fast. And you look at all the names of these horses that I think it was listed maybe the top 10 or 15 fastest quarter miles and fastest half miles. And what you find is there's almost nobody that, well, there's no, I don't think there were any winners in there, but there will be now. And there weren't many horses that even hit the board. Bodemeister was one, though, that did. And Baffert is, it seems like, for this horse who faced this set of circumstances, this horse had exactly the right team in terms of Baffert not afraid to be aggressive with his horses, and a guy like Mike Smith, same way as a rider. If speed is the horse's biggest asset, he's going to take full advantage of it.
You know, and two, when you watch this Derby, I don't know about you, Tom, it kind of reminded me of the Pharoah Belmont, because Justify got out there the way that he did. And I was like, wow, he's right in the mix. He's, you know, he's pushing this thing, which is the same thing American Pharoah did in the Belmont to win the Triple Crown. And I remember thinking that and watching that because I was at Belmont Park and I was like, what's Espinoza doing? This is not the move. This is, you know, he's going to run out of gas, but he never did. And Justify never ran out of gas. I mean, a lot of people, because of it was muddy and because it was a sloppy track and all this other stuff, you know, I've heard people compare it to American Pharoah's Preakness run, but really the way the race was ran kind of reminded me of that Belmont, and as impressive as that was. Now, I'll say this. If you watch that race, you know, Good Magic had to give up a little bit of ground coming around the turn, but Good Magic was right there with him every step of the way as far as, you know, he didn't drop back. He was able to maintain. I don't know if there's anything that Good Magic can do different to eclipse that 2.5 lengths in the Preakness. if he even runs. You know, Chad Brown has yet to make a decision. But Good Magic was really impressive on that day as well.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Let's shift gears to Kentucky basketball. Combines next week, and P.J. Washington, Jared Vanderbilt, Winion Gabriel don't have agents as they go through this process, and Winion's doesn't have the invitation yet. But what's your take on how many of those three guys end up back in a Kentucky uniform next season?
You know, I kind of go back and forth with a lot of this. I think that Jared Vanderbilt ends up back in a Kentucky uniform. I think that would, if I was going to say, like, okay, give a percentage or give, you know, which one do you think is most likely, I think Jared Vanderbilt is the most likely. I think just kind of reading the tea leaves a little bit, now that he's gone through some workouts, maybe P.J. Washington is less likely. Kids, families, you know, maybe they get it in their head that they really want to go for some odd reason. And look, I don't have any inside information on this whatsoever. I just get it. I just get this feeling in my head that P.J. Washington would really like to go right now. And I think Winion Gabriel's, I think Winion Gabriel's the wild card because at some point, you know, when you don't get the combine invite, that probably should tell you everything that you need to know about what you should do. But if Winion Gabriel is fixated on becoming a professional right now and starting his career, then, you know, whether it's going straight to the G League, whether it's going overseas, you know, that's something that can't be defined from somebody on the outside looking in. So I think Winion Gabriel, I would classify him as the wild card in all this. I think Vanderbilt will be back. And Washington, like I said, if I was leaning one way or another with him, I'd think that he eventually stays in the draft.
Ken Spencer, thank you much.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it, buddy.
Ken Spencer from WHAS-TV in Louisville. Five away from the top of the hour. Back to wrap up this edition of the Bleacher Report in just a moment. It's the Bleacher Report Radio Network, final segment, and a story just coming out from the New York Times says that the National Basketball Coaches Association, the NBA coaches, have voted Dwayne Casey of the Raptors as their coach of the year. The announcement is expected to come later today. Thrilled for Dwayne, the former Wildcat. I'm sure it'll be bittersweet given that they just got swept by the Cavs, but hopefully Toronto will be wise enough not to make a rash decision and change coaches, as some are speculating that might happen. Happy birthdays to UK tight end C.J. Conrad and former Wildcat basketballer John Hood. We'll see you tomorrow on the Bleacher Report.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report Radio Network.